Right, good evening everyone, and welcome to this Harrow Community and Wellbeing Scrutiny Committee. And seeing it's the first of 2024, I've got to say a belated Happy New Year to everyone. And thank you to everyone that took part in putting a green light in their window for the Samaritans as well on the 22nd of December. I think that's correct. So thank you to everybody that took part in that. Can I please ask, will you put your telephones on silent or switch them off completely, please, so we don't have any interruptions? And we'll take the first item on the agenda.
Minutes.
Has anybody got any queries on the minutes from the last meeting on the 29th of November?
No.
Everybody okay with that? Great. So I can sign them. Thank you. Apologies, Jackie.
No
apologies? Great. No public question time? No. No councillor? No. Right. The members' items. So we'll take pages 3 to 7 on the Healthcare and Urban Group Scrutiny Committee. I take it you've all read that and it's got to be noted.
Can you comment on it? I know we can't ask questions, but can we just comment?
Yeah.
Do you want to comment on the ambulance?
I have a comment for ambulances and maternity, if it's appropriate for me to
make. Yeah, you know, all right, it says they're noted, but if you've got any queries or anything, then we can take them back.
Well, as some of you know, I was lucky enough to get a job at Healthwatch, but it wasn't Healthwatch Stafford. But it did give me information nationally. Unfortunately, I did discover that a lot of information at Healthwatch, rather than being taken to the relevant places, is simply just being saved to hard drives or just put in drawers. And this is related to ambulances. So the information related to ambulances was showing, or in general, that there's been empty ambulances without staff. There's been, and this is nationally, UHNM borrowing ambulances.
But Louise, we're just looking at Staffordshire.
But it has a knock-on effect. If you bear with me, UHNM borrowing ambulances from Wales, Cornwall and the Isles of Scilly are also borrowing ambulances from Wales, and that happening up and down the country. Nursing staff in ambulances looking for acute beds up and down the country. Queues of ambulances not managing to get through A&E. And generally, the service was in meltdown, and I'd just like to take my hat off to any of the staff that are trying to deal with this.
Yeah, we had a very big discussion, and it's something that's high on our agenda at the county, so it's something that we are, you know, keeping above board with it. So, Jeremy, do you want to comment on anything? No.
No, but it didn't feel like it was relevant to Staffordshire, which is...
Well, that's what... That's
it,
what
is, it is relevant to Staffordshire,
because...
Can we not have a cross-party?
...table rather than just in general terms.
Yeah.
Can I,
you want to come back on the maternity, did you say? You want to comment on that?
Please, can I just comment that there is a knock-on effect with Staffordshire, because it's a chain that's affecting up and down the country. We're borrowing ambulances nationally.
Yeah, carry on, yeah.
And then, as far as maternity is concerned, I have submitted an FOI on this item, and I'm waiting for a response.
I'm sorry?
I've asked for an FOI request on that item.
Right.
And I'm waiting for the response. So could we bring that same item to the next committee so that I can feed that information into that?
Well, we'll see what... Yeah, okay. Yeah, fine.
Chair, can I just make a comment? It is very disappointing to see all this.
I'm sorry?
Very disappointing to see all this and hope that it's going to be really rectified. 20 years I've worked in the health service, and I've never seen it so bad. So I sincerely hope that all these that are on this can be addressed.
I can only say to the committee that, and Jeremy Perter, who chairs the committee at the county, we're doing an awful lot of work there and trying to keep on board with everything that's happening with the National Health Service, you know, and pertinent to Staffordshire, of course. But, you know, we're very concerned about some of the things, but we are keeping on top of it and trying to do the best that we can and fetching the right people in to answer the questions. So, you know,
yeah,
bear with us on that.
Yeah, if you can keep on top of it, that would be wonderful.
Yeah, well, we, as I say, we're doing as much as we can.
If you've got some good news to tell us, that would be great at the next meeting or however it goes.
Yeah, believe you or me, there's a lot of work goes off. And, you know, if you're ever interested, please come along to the health meetings and listen to what is said, because it is interesting. Anne, did you want to come in?
Well, I wanted to ask about waste care in landfill, because there were, within this it says that there were concerns about the accuracy of the hydrogen sulfide data recorded and collected, and the environmental health were going back to gather more data, which would be more accurate. I mean, have they started that now? Because can I say to you,
from the committee, actually, we asked the environment, the chairman asked the environmental people to attend a meeting which took place at Newcastle, and the committee went up to Newcastle, and Councillor Hood was there as well, and we had a very good debate, but the environmental refused to come. They refused to come.
Well, they made a terrible error, that's why, I presume.
Exactly.
But
it's,
you know,
still actually, I don't know if you've heard
if
today.
If they started to collect it, this data accurately now.
Yes,
because
yes.
Because it is really affecting
yes,
people's
yes,
health.
Yes, they have. Yes.
They have
yeah,
started.
Yes. Yeah. So let's hope, you know, and it's still high on the agenda because it's been on the news again today.
I mean, it's terrible. It shouldn't be happening.
It's absolutely, and if you ever went up there and got that smell, because I've been up there, and actually, awful. And I feel sorry for the people that live around there. So, it was really, really disappointing that the environmental people refused to come to the committee. Absolutely.
Data.
Yeah, absolutely.
So
disgusting.
Will the chairman advise us when the next meeting is? Please?
Sorry?
Will the chairman advise us when the next meeting is?
Yes. Our next meeting is next Monday. The health and the health meeting at the county is on the 29th, I think
29th.
It is. It's 29th, the week on Monday.
And that's in county buildings?
Yes.
And what time is it?
10 o'clock.
Sorry, what time?
10 o'clock.
It's written in the
notes. Is there any input?
Sorry?
Because I'm working. If I wanted to watch a county council meeting, where we could watch it on YouTube or...
Yeah.
You've got that facility.
Yes, you can watch it. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you catch up,
yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. So, where have I got this before now? let's on to... I'll invite Mr Clark, actually, and you're very, very welcome to come along and give your presentation. And then we'll take questions afterwards, if anybody's got any questions.
Okay, yeah. Thank you. Thank you very much for inviting me along. I've been to these meetings a couple of times now. I think what people really value is the opportunity to discuss and raise any issues. But I'm conscious that there are some probably new people on this committee, so I thought I'd give you a brief introduction first as to what we're about. So I'm Les Clark, I'm the Executive Director for Housing and Care with the Housing Trust Group. Housing Trust Group, really, this is what I hope you've got to do, just give you an overview, let you know about some changes that have taken place since the last update of scrutiny. Just to give you a little bit of information about the challenges and achievements that we've had and still face, and just to talk about keeping elected members informed, and then the final bit is always to deal with any concerns that you have. I won't be able to give you an answer necessarily to everything here and now, but I will take them away, and I always do follow up on whatever is raised and always do come back to you or get the right people to deal with it. So basically, the Housing Trust Group, the primary purpose is to provide good quality housing, and we do that through maintaining the properties that we have and developing new ones. We also provide good services. We hope to provide good services to help people to maintain their tenancies and to maintain a home, to help them cope with life and to live well at home. We also are interested in improving the neighbourhoods and communities, which is obviously part and parcel of the home. The home goes beyond the bricks and mortar that you live in. And we're providing opportunities for local people, and also using the resources that we have to fund what we call some of the plus services, which is why there's a plus in the Housing Plus group. We provide compatible services, principally care and employment and money advice, which is particularly important in the current situation. We have a board of governors, I won't go through them all, but it's a fairly fine list. The executive team has changed a little bit since I was last here. Sarah Bowen is still in place. Vicky Wibley is now Director of Finance, Legal and Governance and Transformation. She's on maternity leave at the moment, just had a third baby. I don't quite understand why anybody would have three, but, but there you go. Some people like them. Andrew Kenny is now the director. Andrew Kenny is now the director of property, and John Roche is covering IT, information and transformation, while Vicky's on maternity. And then you've got me, of course. Recent changes. I think that one of the big things we're facing is obviously the cost of living. Inflation is a massive challenge. It's a challenge for our tenants and customers, but it's a huge challenge for us, not least because the cost of everything we do, the equipment, fire doors, and all the stuff that goes into keeping a house has all gone up. Interest rates, as you know, have gone up massively, which affects the cost of borrowing, because we're spending more on servicing our loans. Like everybody else, it means that you've got a little bit less money, actually quite a lot less money, to do some of the other things we would normally like to do. There's been major changes in terms of building safety. Obviously, the Grenfell Tower fire highlighted lots of problems with buildings, and there's a new building safety bill that's gone through. And compliance remains our number one priority as an organisation. It's compliance first is our mantra. I'm always keen to say that it's compliance first and not compliance only, because we don't just want to live in a compliant environment, we want a little bit more than that. Resident safety has also been of paramount importance. In the last year, we fitted every single home with carbon monoxide detectors. That was a requirement which came in fairly short notice, a tight time scale to do it. I don't think anybody in the world achieved it within the exact time scale, but we achieved 99.9 something percent on time, and the rest we've managed to get into now 100% compliant to that. Health of residents is also crucially important, and you all know about the tragic case in Rochdale, linked to damp and mould and respiratory illness. It's a massive problem across the country, really. I saw something on the news just this morning. I don't know if anybody watches Call the Midwife, but it was even on Call the Midwife on Sunday. And you know, and it just, we kind of think it is something which is new and exploded, but it's been around for such a long time. And you would kind of hope that by this time in our evolution that it wouldn't be quite the problem it is, that it is. But it is massive, and it's you know, taken up a lot of time and resource for us. We've also got the things I call life as we know it. COVID has not quite gone, but it's left a tail, because during all the time that people were isolating and not going out, we weren't doing some of the repairs that we probably would have done routinely. People weren't letting us in to do them. So we've ended up with a backlog of repairs, and quite often we're not actually seeing them manifested until people leave the properties. So we're finding that the properties are being left in a worse condition than they would have been before, and needing a lot more work done to them before we can re-let them. And I think it's, you know, it's also affected customers' behaviour. So people who have got respiratory conditions are very anxious about letting people in, and if they've got a cough themselves, or if anybody comes with a cough, they might turn the workers away. So that's had a really, you know, psychological impact on people, really. And it's also impacted on recruitment and staffing. It's really hard to get staff in virtually every single area. Care staff is incredibly hard. But even the trades, and find a lot of the professional staff in the offices that they don't want to work in an office full time. You know, we've even had some people say, you know, we said they've got to come into the office one day a week, and they said, oh, stick your job then. Literally, stick your job then. And they walked out the interview and never come back. So it's really interesting, some of the long-term sociological changes that resulted in this. We've got regulatory change coming through and on the environment. We've got tenant satisfaction measures and consumer standards. I personally think that's fantastic. It kind of takes us a little back in time too when we had the TSA, but it's putting a strong focus on the needs of tenants, which I absolutely think it should be about. The Ombudsman's getting additional powers. He's using the powers that he's got to their extreme, possibly even overreaching some of the powers in some cases. They are encouraging, and we are all seeing, an increase in complaints. The Ombudsman's office has increased its staffing levels by 440%, I think. They're issuing a lot more maladministration, severe maladministration findings, but they've got a backlog of cases. You know, we've got cases coming through now that were lodged with the Ombudsman 2 or 3 years ago, and that makes it quite difficult for us to respond to, but it's also quite horrible for us, really, in some ways, because we've made a lot of changes over the last couple of years to be much more customer focused and to involve customers more and to deliver good quality services, and we find that we're being hammered for things that happened 3 years ago, and it kind of hurts a little bit, and it's disappointing when you see it, because it kind of makes you feel like you haven't achieved very much. But we have achieved a lot, but there are still some bad things around, and you know, we're still dealing with some of them. Certainly the Ombudsman is taking some more punitive approaches. You may have seen, if you're addicted to the Housing Ombudsman's website, as I am, that some of the fines that they're handing out to councils are absolutely phenomenal. I think I saw one for a London borough that was fined something like £15,000 by the ordered to pay £15,000 in compensation. So it's becoming an increasingly important thing to pay attention to. There's a new Housing Ombudsman's Complaints Code coming out soon, which isn't really much different from where we are, and I think we are more or less on target for that anyway. And on top of all that, life is really hard for some of our tenants. You know, people talk about choosing between heating and eating, and that is the reality for some of our tenants now. You know, it's difficult. And of course, homelessness is increasing as well. And nobody's building enough homes to deal with homelessness, really. You know, even people who are unsheltered, so that like street homelessness is increasing quite alarmingly, I think, really.
Please, may I ask a question?
Yeah.
No, can you leave your questions till the end?
What screen was that? Sorry, and I'll refer back to that later. What number slide was it?
Well, I don't know. Say six. We've got lingering challenges, voids, you know, every time a property's empty, that means somebody's not got a home, not living there. We've got increasing needs, mental health is becoming a much more prevalent problem. I think we've seen a lot of that probably because of COVID, but also I think people are just much more aware and they're facing a lot more deprivation. Antisocial behaviour is increasing, most of it low level, but it's still increasing, and it makes people feel unhappy in the home. Support is all but disappeared. Many years ago we had supporting people money, which helped us to support tenants in situ, and it wasn't necessarily tenants with specific identified needs, it was people who just found it damn difficult to cope, and that money isn't there anymore, really. And so we're having to find ways to support people, sometimes using lottery grants and so on and so forth, but all too often people just aren't getting the support, and they're ending up in need of, but not necessarily getting, support from mental health services, because again, that's quite difficult to get, and it's a really important issue. I mean, suicide is the most common cause of death in young men, and it just doesn't seem to get the attention, really. It's quite difficult. Damp and mould, as I say, is probably the biggest emerging problem. There is a lot of it. You would like to think that we wouldn't have much, but you know, the design of the buildings, the age, some of them aren't well heated or aren't well insulated. The saying goes, where there's cold, there's likely to be mould. So that's an issue. People can't afford to put the heating on, so that's causing a problem. People are drying the clothes in the houses, which causes condensation. And often, you know, some of it's just the fabric and structure of the buildings, dodgy roofs, rising damp, all sorts of things. There are structural elements, absolutely. In the past, the tendency was to blame the customer and safety lifestyle. The Ombudsman said we shouldn't be doing that, and we absolutely shouldn't. But sometimes it is a contributory factor. So I think we've got to deal with the structural elements, you know, repair the windows, the roofs, the walls, the cracks. But we've also got to support people and think about how they can keep warm and do the laundry and things like that. So there's definitely a socio-economic dimension to the sort of advance of that board. So what have we delivered? I think we have improved our communication with elected members. I think members find it easier to get in touch with us. One of the things which was raised at the last meeting was that actually nobody knows who to contact or anything. What we did was we sent out to all of the councillors a list of what we call the patches and who's responsible for the patches and who's responsible for what. And we've updated that, I think, every 3 to 6 months so that members know exactly who to contact. We have responded to all the issues that have been raised in scrutiny. I certainly noticed more face-to-face dialogue with councillors. I've met a few councillors, and I think, to be fair, when we met with them, they've been pleasantly surprised at the fact that we do listen and we do sort things out and deal with things. And in terms of the homes, we've also built 32 new homes in the borough, 18 for social rent, 12 affordable, and a couple of shared ownership homes as well. So we're still delivering on that promise to build more new homes. Supporting customers in difficult times. Burton Square, we opened a new community hub in Burton Square. That's had, I'll come on that actually, but we managed, in spite of the difficulties, to maintain our income. We're still at actually less than 3% arrears on rents, which is phenomenal, really. We do have former tenant arrears, so these are people who have left the homes and haven't paid the rent up, and that's still a bit of a problem. But we've actually saved £2.63 million for our customers, either through getting them cheaper utilities or getting them access to benefits. And we've supported over 2,300 customers through our Employment and Money Advice Service. We've got the new hub opened in Burton Square. Burton Square is in one of the areas of highest deprivation, not just in the borough, but within the country. High levels of poverty, people out of work, poor health, so on and so forth, and so that's why we decided to put it there. In that area alone, we only opened this hub in July, but we delivered £1.9 million of extra income or savings for people who have used the hub, and we've had 625 people through the doors in just 6 months, and we had an annual target of about 530, I think it was, so it's proved to be really popular. And we're also working in partnership with other organisations. So the one that impressed me and stays on my mind most is Period Poverty. And as a bloke, you don't necessarily always think that people couldn't afford sanitary products for when women are on the periods. And so this charity actually actively delivers on that and provides free sanitary wear. And we are providing us an outlet where people can come in and get them. Thinking of that, and we're also thinking about how we can work with the NHS and looking at things like free contraception, condoms, etc., for people who might want to avoid pregnancy, so that we can start to bring more services in. We're going to be doing more. The Roundhouse, some of you may know the Roundhouse. There's a lovely building in Stafford which hasn't been used for several years. We're going to be working with third sector organisations to provide food bank and to use warm spaces. We've also set aside a customer support fund. This is for people who are struggling, who might want to get, you know, they might want to go for a job interview, but they haven't got a suit or they need some support or interview preparation. We've got a substantial amount of money which is set aside for that. We've also made donations to food and toy banks. We're improving access to our services through chatbots. And we're returning to what we call fundamentals or back to basics, and we're going to be developing old style housing management. Some of the older people in this room, like me, will remember when the rent man used to come around and knock on your door with a little satchel and he used to take your
rent. Should I do that now?
They don't, no. He used to come and he used to mark your rent card and they'd sort of like, hello, how's things? And they'd be poking their eyes through the door and seeing what's going on. And it was a set of eyes from your housing provider on your house. And actually, it's a really good way of gaining intelligence in a non-threatening and informal way. It's also a good way of getting your rent paid, to be honest. And so we're going to be introducing that again in the Rising Brook area, so as we can actually get a handle on what the needs of our customers are. Because again, we find there's strong correlations between the state of the property, deprivation, and people who have got chaotic and difficult lifestyles. And this might be a way for us to get in and start early and provide the support that they need. So I think that's going to be quite interesting. We've started a reconnected project with National Lottery funding, and that's to get lonely, particularly older people, coming together so that they can meet with people. And I think we've got about £188,000 from the National Lottery to set that up, and that's working really well. So despite the changes, we are supporting those in greatest need. We've got the EMA, Employment Money Advice, we've got Burton's Care, we've got Traditional Housing Management. We've really improved customer engagement over the last few months. We've moved away from what we call a scrutiny committee to a customer partnership panel, and that's about us working together. We've got real engagement, and we're using things like customer feedback and complaints to tell us what is wrong. You know, and instead of just apologising, we're actually saying, well, we need to change that policy. You know, I think the practice in the past was to say, well, that was the policy, that's what we did, so you're wrong. Now we're saying, well, if that's not the policy you want, what do you want? And so we're working with customers to design the policies. We prioritise things like trees, fencing. We've changed the tenancy agreement to plain English, because quite often, you know, the tenancy agreement has been weaponised. And so we made it into plain English so that people can understand it and know what know what's what. And so we're linking all of that and prioritising our lettings policy, our allocations policy, was 23 pages long. And it didn't tell you actually how you got a house. It told you when you weren't entitled to one rather than how you could get one. So we've completely revised that with customers. It's much better. We've also been working with the local authority on decarbonisation. So quite a lot to do. We've got DFGs, which is Disability Facilities Grants, and adaptations, working really well now with the borough. We've done 30 completions, we've got 44 in progress, 48 booked in for appointments, and 60 or so at survey stage. So that process is starting to work well, and it's a really important part of social housing. As I say, we've done the carbon monoxide alarms in a very short programme, and we've got the decarbonisation phase two, which is making people's homes warmer and more affordable to heat. Again, a lot of things that we're working on with other people: homelessness, domestic violence, working with the Women's Refuge, safer communities, working with others on antisocial behaviour, environmental health are becoming an important partner. Hoarding is a big issue, to be honest. It's becoming really, really important. And I think since COVID as well, and people become isolated, it's become much more of an issue. And we find that when properties are emptied or become void, when tenancies come to an end, we're finding more and more with really severe hoarding. Now, you know, it's not just that it's messy, but it's actually a safety issue, because actually people can't escape if there's a fire. The amount of combustible material that people have got collected in the homes, which could catch fire, it really is an important health and safety issue. It's an important mental health issue, and we need to find a way of dealing with it. We have done a pilot in Stafford using some of our specialists from Shropshire, and we've got some really good case studies which we'll be sharing with our colleagues in the council soon. I think we've been getting the democratic process, we've working cleaner, greener spaces, and working with colleagues to, you know, deliver a healthier Stafford, working with the NHS. So let's say one of the big issues for councils has been getting to the right person, and when things go wrong, who do you get to? So we've got this list, these are the key people, and I think really that's improved the situation quite a lot. And so really this is about us working together, and if there's anything that anybody wants to ask me about or raise with me, I'm happy to see what we can do on that. Okay. Thank you
very much, Les. That was really, really an interesting presentation, and I'm sure we've got loads of questions in that for you. But you know, can I just say to you, talking about the hoarding that you've just been talking about, do you know that Midland Partnership Foundation Trust are doing a lot of work on that? And are you in contact with those about the hoarding situation?
Well, speaking to Aaron, and I agreed to have my colleagues going to have a conversation about that.
And just to comment as well, yeah, you know as well as I do, for the last 3 years I've been working to try and get that roundhouse open.
Yep,
and we're hoping to achieve it.
We're almost there.
Yeah, we're almost there, but not there yet. But you know, that'd be really good for the Siltmore side of the area because of, like I say, you've got the one in Burton Square, and if we can do some work in the roundhouse with that, that'd be absolutely brilliant. So thank you for that. Yeah, so really, you know, and again, you talked about a contact list for councillors and that. We would have some, it's updated again, you know, with some telephone numbers and everything, so everybody around this table, or all the councillors, know exactly where to go. Because you've got 80% of the housing stock, you know, and we get many problems, and sometimes it's really, where do we go and what do we do?
Yeah.
Right, so.
The interesting thing is quite a lot of the tenants still think that your council houses. So
I know,
to
I know.
It sounds silly, but it's the truth. And they tend to come to councillors if they've got an issue.
Yeah.
So it's valuable working together, really.
Yeah. But I'm going to throw it open to the committee now. If anybody's got any questions they'd like to ask, James, I'll go around,
My question was around void properties. How, from the moment that a property becomes empty, how typically, what is the sort of turnaround to getting it refilled?
It's been getting a little bit longer, partly because of the condition of the properties when we get them back. It really is a variable feast. It depends how much work is required. What we're trying to do, and again through this sort of back to fundamentals project, is we're trying to make sure that when we get the properties back, they're in a better condition. And realistically, quite a lot of the work that we have to do when we get a property back, and shouldn't really be having to do, you know, some of these things are the tenant's responsibilities. So we are introducing a recharging policy, which sort of says, you know, if you leave the home with a broken door, you're going to have to pay to fix it. And I think that will help to drive behaviours. We're also going to try and do more pre-termination inspections by video where we can, so as we can see in advance of a tenancy ending what work needs to be done, because quite a lot of the work we're doing currently as void work actually should have been done as responsive repairs while the tenancy was in situ and in an operation. So there's a variable fees, but sometimes it can take up to 6 weeks and even longer. Really, some of the homes are left in such a bad condition that we really have to question whether or not we retain them because they're beyond economical repair in some cases.
Thank you, Daz. Right, Louis, do you want to question?
I've observed within the homeless community a large proportion of autistic people. I've also observed autistic children and their attitudes, and have observed that at a very young age they have it in their head that they're going to be homeless and they don't have a future. And I wonder, and they're actually planning it and playing it and totally absorbed in sitting on the floor, acting out, being homeless. And I just wondered, is it possible to bridge the gap between your service and the autistic children so that they can see that in the future they will be have the possibility of having a house and they will have the possibility of having a future? Because when you're working with them, we put in a lot of scaffolding and a lot of support and a lot of pictorial support for them, so they've really got it in their head what the processes are. But of course there isn't a process around this. You just assume that people would know what to do, and these people just don't know.
I think, to be honest, there's a whole spectrum of what people are now calling neurodivergency. And it's a phrase and a concept that wasn't talked about even a year or two ago, really, that nobody talked about neurodivergence. It is becoming much more obvious. And when you look at things like complaints, people that have been evicted in the past, there's often an element of neurodivergence in there. And I think one of the things that we've just launched our EDI strategy, which is equity, diversity and inclusion. And one of the things we're looking at is actually how we can support people with autism and you know, people who are on the spectrum, and also at the other end of the scale, people who've got dementia, which is another form of neurodiversion, to maintain the tendencies. And I think sometimes it's about how we enable them to get support while the tendencies. How we deal with kids that are potentially heading towards homelessness or have an expectation of homelessness is a really difficult question.
It's
not something that we've talked about before. And I think, I'd be interested to talk to you about how we can do that, because it's not something which is on anybody's agenda and probably should be.
Yes, please. I'm going to do
that.
Thank you. Anybody else that got any questions?
Yeah, I had two questions.
Yes.
Oh, sorry, Julian, you first.
Yes, I get a lot of people coming to me as their ward member who are living in overcrowded accommodation. And they apply to Homes Plus and they get put in the like categories A, B, and C.
Mm.
What exactly do these mean? And if you go in a van C, which seems to be the normal first protocol like that, how long is the waiting time?
Do you know what?
Any
there's various bands which are defined in the, I can get you a copy or you can have a look on the website for a copy of our allocations and lettings policy, because that actually does set out what the bands are. The problem is, realistically, that we have about 3,000 people in Stafford waiting for a new home. Now, some of those are people who are not currently in social look housing, but some of them are people who are already living with us and looking for a different property. I can be honest with you, there are some people who have been waiting, even in the highest level of need, for 2 and 3 years. And quite often it's people who have got a specific housing need. I think last time I was here we talked about people who have got acquired brain injuries and things that need very specialist accommodation, and it's virtually impossible to find those properties. We have built some recently which are in effect bespoke properties, but the larger properties, if 3 and 4 bedrooms, there are very few of them, and the waiting time can be 2 to 3 years, even with high level of need. We do take account, obviously, if there's a medical need, then that gives a priority. And obviously all the stuff that's going around damp and mould has heightened our awareness of particularly kids with respiratory conditions or people with rare conditions that need that, and they have to take priority, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was your question, yeah. Okay. I mean, can I just come in there and say, what are your plans on building more houses in Stafford?
We were, and we still are, but obviously the impact of the interest rate rises means that our development programme is going to have to be reduced a little bit over the next few years. I mean, obviously if the interest rates dip, which we're all hoping they will, then we might be able to kickstart again, but at the minute the price of borrowing money to build new housing is just too high to deliver the programme that we want it to.
It's quite worrying to think that we've got so much, you know, that many people waiting 2 or 3 years.
I know,
it's really is it.
I think the other thing, just to say, and I think this is a societal problem that really we all need to be working together on, is that it's getting the sites, because quite often the developments are land-led, whereas in reality they should be needs-led. We should be looking at the waiting list, working with partners to identify where the sites are available, and then hopefully planning, working with us to deliver the housing that's needed. But quite often, and I'm not just talking about Stafford here, but quite often it's getting things through planning, which takes such an awfully long time, really. I don't know really what your situation is in with temporary accommodation and bed and breakfast, but quite often you could actually slash the number of people in hotels quite quickly by building a nice block of good quality one bedroom flats, but trying to get the land where you can develop it and the planning permission is incredibly difficult. Somebody needs to take it.
Yeah. Anna, did you want to come in there?
Yeah, obviously we work very closely in partnership with Housing Plus and have our own council's housing allocations policy as well. So absolutely recognise some of the issues that you've just raised there. We prioritise as well, but we also work with other housing associations as well as Housing Plus. So there are wider options available as well that we can directly nominate to. I think looking at the list that we hold, which has a lot of people with acute need there, we don't generally have people waiting as long as you have suggested there. I think you've got much higher demand because obviously you've got your own churn within your own stock as well. That said, yes, we do have a challenge housing some, in particular larger families, in particular those who want to live in a certain specific area, and the turnover just isn't where it needs to be. But those are really the outliers. I think generally we have quite good turnover of stock. We've had a history of good build in the past as well. So I think some of the longest people on our waiting list aren't as high as unfortunately yours are there as well.
Yeah.
But we do work really carefully in partnership. I think what we can also say around voids, because that has an impact on how quickly we can house people, is if we've got people who are in desperate need of properties, Housing Plus will prioritise the works on those voids if we've got people under offer, so that we can get people out of B&B, as you say, quite quickly and into properties so they aren't in that interim situation too.
That's right. And whenever we get a query, if we can't meet the needs, we always do direct them back to the council or to the housing providers. But you know, we do provide a majority of social housing in the borough, so it is quite difficult. I think sometimes you get a bit of an attitude from other providers just sort of thing. You know, we're the main provider, so it's up to us to do it. And, you know, we would love to. And I think, you know, as Anna says, sometimes people don't want to leave the area, so you could provide them with a house somewhere, but they want it somewhere else. And that's the difficulty. It's having the right houses in the right places at the right time that are going to meet the need in perpetuity. Because, again, you know, we do quite a lot of DFGs and adaptations. Quite often you adapt a property and then a few years down the line they might move out or they might die or pass on, and that adaptation is there, but then we're adapting another home somewhere else where it would be ideal if people could move into that one, but it's all about choice really.
Do you want to come back in?
Yes please. They take the names off the list because they get frustrated with the length of time, and you get into a mindset where all the authority and everything is against them.
Yeah, well, it's definitely not against them. We always do what we can, you know. And we, as Anna said, you know, we work almost miracles in some cases, you know, to get people housed very, very quickly.
Thank you for that, Councillor Rose.
On the first page, you said something about providing for Plus. I was just wondering what the Plus was.
Well, the Plus is the stuff around employment and money advice, and the fact that we've got we've managed to get sort of like all that extra money and benefits and access to employment. You know, I think that's the thing really. The Be Connected service, so that we're helping older people in particular who are lonely and helping them to keep warm. You've got the food banks and all the stuff that we're doing through Burton Square, which really have a massive impact. I mean, when you think about 2.8 million quid, you think, what can we do with 2.8 million quid? The answer is quite a lot, really. So it's that sort of stuff, really.
Do you want to come back in?
Yeah, and the second question was, you talked about decarbonisation. I was just wondering what you're kind of doing. What you are doing to decarbonise?
We've got a huge grant and we're working with local authority partners, and we're doing all that stuff around cladding. We're trying to get rid of electrical storage heaters. We're doing all the stuff around loft insulation, changing windows. Everything that's on the spectrum of decarbonisation. We've got a very high programme. We have got a lot of buildings which are really old and not very well insulated. One of the other issues that we have, I don't call it a problem, but it's a factor in this area, is we've got quite a lot of old miners' properties where they get free coal. And if you get free coal, you might not be quite so keen to give that up. And it's an issue in reality, and it's quite difficult if you're on a street or if you've got like semi-detached bungalows and one person says they want it and the other one won't. So there's some real practical difficulties, and I don't think anybody's quite come up with a plan for how you compensate them for the loss. But yeah, we've doing an awful lot really, and I think we've got about £1.7 million for decarbonisation. Yeah. Gotta be honest, decarbonisation is not my area of particular interest. I'm not quite Trumpian about it, it's not my area of expertise particularly.
Mm. Okay.
Thank you.
Right. Philip, do you want to come in?
A couple of things. First of all, what representations do residents have? I noticed that there's no resident representatives on your board, for example.
Well, I'm glad you raised that, actually, and I should have probably said, one of the things we've been doing over the last few months, probably a year or so, is we've been looking at improving customer experience, and we've actually appointed a director for improving the customer experience. She went off on maternity leave fairly soon after she was appointed, which is a shame, but we managed to appoint the most able substitute in the form of Becky Hughes, and we've been doing a lot of work with customers, and we are now in the final stages of arranging to have a tenant board member on the Homes Board, which is the housing subsidiary.
Yeah.
So that is really good news. We've also increased the customer partnership panel in size and scope, and we're doing a lot of work now to try and increase the diversity, shall we say, of the customer partnership panel. Because I think one of the problems that you often get with customer partnership panels and customer groups is that they tend to be of a specific demographic, often old, white, and well-educated or with a vested interest, so we're trying to get that diversified.
Okay.
Yeah.
The other thing is you have sheltered housing schemes and flats and so on. Do these have sprinkler systems in them?
I don't think they all do, no. No. But they
are
all
you working to put sprinkler systems in?
I don't think they are. They all have very high quality fire doors. So they offer now, the newer ones that are going on, offer up to about an hour of protection if a fire breaks out within the flat. And we operate a stay-put policy, which means that people remain in the homes and that door will keep them safe for long enough to be rescued by the fire and rescue service.
Yeah.
So there isn't really a need for a sprinkler system.
Okay. The other thing is, the last one is, are you working with people to house asylum seekers?
Yes.
Particularly those who have been granted status.
Yeah, we definitely are. We're not seeing an awful lot of demand, to be honest, but we definitely are doing that. And certainly with the ARAP programme, which was the Afghan refugees, the people who had supported British forces in Afghanistan, and we work very closely with our councils to look for properties and to house them.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Can I just come in there? You said about the fire, fire, and and Philip mentioned about sprinklers and that situation. I mean, it's probably 18 months ago now, where a bungalow caught fire. It was a Saturday afternoon. I got told about it. It was in the Siltmore area, and when I got there, there were fire people really ranting and raving because they couldn't get hold of anybody on Housing Plus. So has that situation been sorted?
That was
then
a specific issue, I think, when actually the fire people rang the wrong number.
Right, thank you.
We had quite a discussion about that.
Yeah, so.
And far be it from me to blame our colleagues in the fire service, but we got the wrong number.
Right, okay, so that situation won't happen again.
Well,
you know, where
I can't guarantee it won't happen again because they might ring the wrong number again.
I don't
know. But we have done everything we can to provide them with the support that they need.
Yeah, I know it was a really difficult thing. The bungalow actually burnt down completely.
Yeah, that wasn't actually our fault.
Yeah, I know. And it was a dryer that caught fire, but
it
there you go.
It wasn't our fault, they couldn't get in touch with us.
Right, thank you for that. Thank you. Right, yes.
Thank you. On a positive note, I'd like to thank you for all you've done and helped us.
Thank you.
When I did have problems with residents in our area, you were very quick, very willing to come and speak to them. You also visited their apartments and flats with us, and the repairs were done almost instantly. And one or two have contacted me again, and I've contacted your office, and the same has happened again. The only problem that I have had on a downside is sometimes I don't know whether they don't get through to the right people, the residents, when they want to complain themselves. and that's when they get in touch with me. I don't know what's happening. Maybe you've got new people in place to...
I don't know. I don't know. I'd be sorry if they weren't finding the right way through. I mean, the beauty really is that there is always that safety net, and you know, and if anything, it can be difficult to find the right people in any organisation. You know, a friend of mine was just trying to get a result from a bone scan this afternoon, and I had to tell him how to go around the back door. But you know, people do find it difficult. Hopefully, the new stuff that we're introducing on the website and the chatbot will make it easier. Not everybody wants to use a chatbot, fully understand that, but they should be able to get through to customer services. But certainly, you know, I always say that I'm there as a last resort if people can't get through, and we will always get things sorted out.
Yeah, and I'm glad to hear that you're going to help with autism, dementia and things like that, because that's a field that is always very badly neglected.
Yeah.
And people don't always understand about autism, do they?
No.
Yeah.
I think we're in the process of introducing a new housing management system, which, you know, these things never go well, ever, anywhere. But one of the things that we're hoping to do is we will have better information about our customers. And I think it's really important that people with autism and neurodivergency get the right response on the first contact. And so what we will be able to do, I'm hoping at least, is we'll be able to flag people who have special communication needs or special particularly sensitive handling. And it will flag up on the system, and they will have a dedicated team of people in our customer service centre who know exactly how to deal with that, and who know how to deal with people with dementia, for example. So when that call comes through, the system will pick up the flag and will direct them to an appropriate agent in customer services. And then what we want to do is actually take that a little bit further and actually have teams within our property repairs division, so that you actually send an operative out who not only has the technical skills to fix the gas spoiler, but also understands how people with autism may be slightly frightened and may need special handling. Mm-hmm. So we'll have a special team of operatives. So that's the direction that we're going in. That's part of the equity, diversity,
really
inclusion good. Strategy.
Really
and I think that'll be really positive and really good.
Yeah.
Would
we
be informed of exactly what you do, think?
Yeah,
so
I think
who we can contact.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, I've got some persons. Names and that, but like you say, they change.
Yeah, they do.
And if we've got a name against a particular problem, that would help.
We do now update our contact with councillors, telling them who's who and what's what and who's responsible for each batch. So that should be up to date, you know, within 2 or 3 months. It's always up to date on the website. But the contact numbers are there. You know, that was in response to things that people raised at the last meeting. I think it's been really helpful. And certainly when we start bringing in these developments, we're improving the website. We're also going to be getting feedback from people who use the website to say, was it clear? Was it helpful? Was it true? Did it actually work like that? And so when we do that, and I think we've also now started sending out the newsletters that we send to our customers, we're now sending out to elected members as well. So, so that actually you know what we're telling our residents.
That's really
good.
Great.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Let's keep up the good work.
Sure, thank
yeah.
you.
Thank you. Yeah. Anybody else? Have you got any more questions?
I've got a question. I've got a couple of statements. I'm one of your tenants.
Right.
And I'm very happy.
Good.
In fact, we had another treatment at the plumber today doing the annual tip shop.
Yeah.
I was just thinking, actually, it's not a question, but just... We were talking about old times, and you remember when a landlord, whoever he was, all he had to do was collect the rent.
Yes.
yes.
And it's now so complex. And when you listen to you and one of your colleagues saying what they do and what they have to be responsible for, it's a matter of things that we never thought of 20, 30, 40 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
And congratulations on, you know.
Yeah,
the way I can only speak from me, because I can't speak for people who are autistic or anything.
Yeah.
And my wife was on the customer ward.
Oh, good.
Has anybody else got any more questions they'd like to ask?
Mine's not a question. I've got to go shortly, but I do want to say thanks very much for the presentation.
Yeah. I think, all right, you know, you've answered a lot of questions in your presentation, Les, I've got to say. And, you know, really, really pleased that you've come along and given insight into what's happening with Housing Plus, and it's blown me away actually that you do as much as what you do, you know, and now you're working in different areas, and yeah, it's just not about housing as such, is it?
No, exactly. It's all about communities, really, and people.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I'm always happy to talk about things, look at things. You know, and sometimes, you know, we don't know about things. I mean, when you first spoke to me about the round ties, really, you know, I thought, oh, and we've managed to move it on, and it's going to be put to good use. So, you know, talk to us, really.
Yeah. Well, thank you very, very much, Les, for, you know, giving your evening
my pleasure.
And we'll keep you on the radar. We'll fetch you back in again,
okay.
You know, and keep us updated. So thank
you
very,
thank you very
much.
Indeed,
really interesting.
Thank you.
Right, where are we? What am I on now? Yeah. Item, the work programme is the only thing now on the agenda. And can I say, okay, James, thank you. Thank you for coming tonight. And just to say to you before you go, the 21st of March will be a really big meeting. So I hope everybody will be able to attend. And has anybody got anything they want to say about the work programme?
I was going to say, could we get like a kind of a list of everything that falls under our remit so that we're actually able to understand what we can kind of call into the scrutiny meetings?
Yeah, we can do that, can't we, Jackie?
I haven't got a list, I don't.
Yeah, you haven't got a list, no. Well, we'll have to find one for you, yeah, make sure that
so
we do.
For the future, I'm just saying for the future would be very useful to kind of
understand. Yeah, I understand
exactly
where you're coming from.
In.
Yeah, that'd be great. And just coming back to what you digressing a little bit right to the back to the beginning of the meeting, Louise, and you mentioned about Health Watch. We have Health Watch come as a member on our health at county when we have our meetings.
That would be helpful.
Jeremy, just remind me of the gentleman's name. I can't remember it.
Baztam.
Yeah. But he comes to our meeting. He can't vote on anything, but he comes to the meeting and gives an input from Health Watch. I just wanted you to be aware of that, Louise. So anybody got anything to say on the work programme? No, you're quite happy? Well, bear in mind, on the 21st of March, we've got a really big meeting, and it will be, So I hope everybody will be able to attend. Well, thank you very much for this evening. I think it's been quite an informative meeting, and I'm really pleased that Housing Plus have been along and given us an insight. So thank you. Thank you, and safe journey home, everyone.